Our bodies are literally saline solution in motion. Our tears are salt, our sweat is salt, our urine is salt. Our bodies use salt and water to balance itself.
Why do we want to spend the extra time and potentially money and effort in getting some kind of a sea salt when I could just buy table salt? Isn't salt bad for you?
That's really the twofold problem. Salt is used as a cheap preservative on foods that we probably shouldn't be eating. And then the second problem is the salt that you're using to salt your food is probably somewhat demineralized. The bigger challenge is salt actually really helps when it comes to your body's ability to process insulin.
Natural populations of humans would be drinking water out of springs. And springs contain the slew of electrolytes and minerals that we have to now replace.
I do think there's something to having a natural oxygenated water versus one that our ancestors would have never recognized or ever used if they had the choice of a spring water. Salt is who we are. It's not the salt, just like for years we heard that all fat was bad, and it turns out we actually need good fat like we need good salt.
Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I am your co-host, Dr. Morgan McDermott, and this is a show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Leah and I share our natural women's health and motherhood guidance that you've been looking for through our fresh, functional, and balanced lens. And today, you guys, I have on a very special guest. This is Daryl from Redmond Real Salt, and he is here to talk all about minerals, salt intake, dietary intake, salt sources, how salt should be considered as a health food, and what we should maybe be looking out for, different ways that salt can be refined or not. And also, we had a really fascinating conversation about water sources and the minerals that were in the water from our human adaptation. And how do we get salt? And how is our water now different when it's a dead water? What is dead water? So, I mean, we really deep dive into so many different topics. And Daryl is a fascinating person because he's very nerdy about this topic in the way that I'm very nerdy about birth. And so it was a really beautiful joining of forces to talk and deep dive into a topic that maybe you haven't really thought that much about, but I promise you're going to learn a lot. So here we go. Okay, welcome to the podcast, Daryl. Daryl Bouchard is a salt expert from Redmond that we are going to absolutely pick your brain apart today and talk about all of the salt myths and the controversies and just get some clarity about what is going on with the salt and sodium intake world. What about natural sources of salt that, you know, humans were actually eating way back in the day? Because that's the way that I like to think about things. But so I wanted to just read a very quick bio to intro the listeners here, which Daryl Bouchard is a passionate and healthy living, healthy eating, and lifelong learning dude here from Redmond, Utah. And you earned your Bachelor of Science degree at the Southern Utah University and followed by an MBA at Western Governors University. And you work for the family mineral business, which is so cool. So when you were like a little kid, was it around or did it happen throughout your life?
Yeah, I tell people when I was a kid, if I got in trouble, my dad would tell me, if you don't straighten up, I'm going to send you to the salt mines. And he wasn't kidding. Yeah, so my grandpa and his brother in the 1950s started the company. So I've been around, I haven't been around that long. The salts makes me look young, but not quite 1950s young.
That would be actually like a terrifying thing, but also such a cool childhood to grow up seeing that whole entire process and, you know, being intimately connected with this and working with the family. So very cool. Thank you for being here. I'm obsessed. If any of the listeners have been following for any length of time, you know that I am, you know, there's a few things that I think everybody sort of gets obsessed with. Like we all have our things, and Relight is one of them for me. Like I am just such a fan. So I really appreciate what you guys are doing and just the transparency, because it's hard to find companies that are actually good. I know you guys have probably lots of feelings about that too, but it's frustrating as somebody who wants to be able to recommend top tier and not feel, you know, like it's one thing as a doctor recommending products to patients to know that there's maybe like something a little bit less ideal with a certain supplement or whatever, and it's fine, it's whatever. And then it's one thing to be like, no, literally every aspect of this company and the work that they do is in integrity. And I just really believe that about Redmond. So thank you.
It's a pleasure to be on the program. And in fact, there's actually, I'd say there's three questions. And maybe we can end with that. But when you're looking for a great electrolyte or a great salt or a great, probably anything, I think there's just three questions you can ask, and I think it'll give you a great product, whether you're buying, you know, a home appliance, whether you're buying salt, whether you're buying eggs. So maybe we can kind of use that as a teaser for these three questions we'll talk about at the end.
Let's go back in time to more ancient human populations. And that's where my training is in anthropology. And I just love to think about how humans are an animal species within this ecology of the world. And there is certain, you know, the set and setting, the environmental conditions of what we adapted with alongside over time. And those are the conditions that bred optimal health for us, you know, like way more time in the sunshine, fresh air, way more time in community, like when we look at these blue zone areas and different things like that. And then, of course, I specifically apply that to motherhood with pregnancy, birth, postpartum, et cetera, because I think that that's how we're going to get to this situation of optimal health and enjoyment in living in community, all these different things. So when it comes to salt, and I think about water sources, and I think about salt exposures for those people back in the day, it's like, I have two questions. One, can we talk about just in general? It feels like salt was probably pretty rare. So how do they get it? Because it's so necessary for your body. And then we'll talk about, okay, then we'll talk about spring water. But first, let's just talk about that first question. What do you have to say about that? Let's dive in.
Well, the beauty of salt is that every civilization that we know of started around access to salt deposits because it is so essential for life. In fact, if you look at any religious text or early history text, all of them talk about the importance of salt, talking about salt is losing its savor, or salt was given as wedding gifts and as fertility gifts, because salt was such an important part of civilization. In fact, the term salary and wage is based on Roman soldiers getting paid a salary or a wage in salt. Because if you don't have access to a refrigerator, everything that we consume outside of season has to be preserved in salt. And our bodies are literally saline solution in motion. Our tears are salt, our sweat is salt, our urine is salt, amniotic fluid is based in salt. So salt is who we are. And it's been that way since recorded history. And if you look at the ocean water today, the ocean water is about three times saltier than we are. You know, we could get into the whole, you know, thing about saline solution, but the standard saline is 0.9%, right? Ocean water is three times saltier, which is why when you go to the ocean, it stings your eyes and burns your nose. And if you were to get an IV of anything but saline solution or lactated ringers, any of those things would burn. In fact, distilled water, an IV of distilled water, the cells would start to rupture. An IV of tap water would kill us. An IV of coffee might sound good in the morning, but it's going to be disastrous because our bodies our saline solution in motion. And so that's why salt is such a critical part of society. And every war has been won or lost over who has access to the salt deposits. If, in fact, up until about 2000, we couldn't even sell salt into China because the emperor knew that if you have a war and you have a military that doesn't have access to refrigeration, whoever owns salt can win the conflict because of the importance of salt, not only as an electrolyte to replace lost sweat, but also to preserve food. So in the Revolutionary War, salt played a role in the success and the failures of the Revolutionary War. And even in the Civil War, the North took out the South's salt works in the Carolinas and kind of hamstrung the military not having salt to preserve food and to take care of their livestock and then ultimately for human success. So salt, it's kind of interesting because if we would have gone back hundreds, maybe 1,000 years ago, we would have probably eaten more salt because all of our meats outside of season, all of our kimchis, our sauerkrauts, all of our preserved veggies would have been preserved in salt. And yet now in the last 100 years or so, we hear that salt's this, you know, white poison. We got to avoid all salt at all costs. Salt's bad. And yet when you go to the hospital, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to give you an IV of saline solution, which is salt water, to help regulate blood pressure, even if you have high blood pressure. So it's not the salt, just like, you know, for years we heard that all fat was bad, and it turns out we actually need good fat like we need good salt.
Okay, wait, I have never made this connection, and this is one of those just dumb things where I feel like maybe others have, I don't know, so forgive me if you are all shaking your heads at me, but I've never thought about, you know, in ancient cultures, you think they've all always lived around or migrated to, if they were moving cultures, to bodies of water, like either the ocean or rivers. And obviously that's because they need water. But what's in the water? Well, if it's the ocean, it's going to be a very salty source. Like if they're fishing, inherently there's going to be salt that comes from that. Even if you cook it and skin it and stuff, there's going to just be some sodium that you're going to get in that source there. But then probably they actually get a lot more in other ways, like with the seaweeds and different things that they're eating. But then if you're inland and you're not near an ocean, but you're near the water, then you're near these natural springs, these natural, you know, rivers and different things, drinking that water, which is going to have at least some, maybe not like a high amount, but some level of sodium, and then the full electrolyte profile as well. And I just hadn't thought about that. Like they go hand in hand, the water and the salt, in terms of survival.
There was a book written by this French, or actually a European naturopath, and the book is Water and Salt, the Essence of Life. And really, that's what it comes down to, is water and salt. And so the early civilizations would all need both of those. And whether you're getting your salt from a current ocean, like the San Francisco Bay or the Gulf of Mexico or the Mediterranean, or you're following the animals and finding out these earth-based deposits that were once historic seabeds. And that's how deposits like the deposit here in Utah was found, was by watching the early man watching the animals find the salt deposits, very similar to the Bolivian salt in Bolivia and the Himalayan or the pink salt that comes out of the Pakistan-Nepal region. Those were all found by watching animals and then the humans knowing that they needed a salt, and animals are a lot more attuned. You know, they can follow that. In fact, some of the ways in the jungle that our ancestors would have found water in the desert is you take an animal and you pen it up and basically make it super thirsty. And then as soon as you turn the animal loose, you follow it. And the animal will find water and they will find salt. And so then humans could follow those animals and find access to water and salt by depriving an animal for a period of time and then following them, because their senses are a lot more keen than ours in that way.
Yeah, it's like they can smell it or something. Okay, but when they're finding salt, when you're saying that, you mean that they're finding it in the water, or are they finding, like, they're not finding a salt mine or a salt lick sitting out in the forest? Like, what are they finding?
They do. They actually can find, so like in the case of this deposit in Utah, it's this ancient seabed, geologists put it 150 million years ago, and then it was buried. And so this deposit was then pushed up and it comes within about 30 feet from the surface. And so the salt that is now Redmond salt was actually found in the Mesa Verde Indian State Park and also in the Fremont Indian State Park here in Utah, because the early ancestral Puebloans would actually watch the animals and then they would find this salt that was pushed to the surface. And that's how the Himalayan deposit was discovered as well.
Like in the dirt, like it's just pushed up?
Yeah. So the now salt, interestingly enough, it doesn't occur right at the surface because fresh water would dissolve that salt crystal away, but it comes within really close to the surface. And so the animals would paw off and move away the soil and find those salt crystals, and then they would have access to salt. And so that's how these ancient seabeds were found, because salt, when we talk about salt today, we're talking about sodium chloride-based salts, which is what our bodies are primarily based. And they can come from a current ocean, from a Dead Sea, like the Dead Sea in Israel or the Dead Sea here in Utah called the Great Salt Lake, or it can come from a prehistoric or an ancient seabed, but they're all coming from an ocean at some point. And so if you lived on the coast, you could go out to the ocean, and ocean water today is 3% salt. So you could get a 5-gallon bucket and scoop up a bunch of salt and bring it home and boil it, boil all the water off, and then you're left with the remaining salt crystals. And the ocean water occurs with potassium chloride, magnesium chloride, calcium chloride, iodine, which is why seaweed is one of the best sources of iodine, is because it's in the ocean and it tends to filter that in the ocean water. And so if you bring that ocean water and boil it and evaporate it all together, you get a complex chloride. It's predominantly sodium and chloride, but you also get these other minerals and elements. As opposed to today, a lot of salt manufacturers, instead of taking the seawater in its complete form, you can take the seawater and now through a series of evaporation ponds, you can pull off those different chlorides. So here in Utah, we have the Great Salt Lake. One of the most valuable minerals out of the Great Salt Lake, which is extremely salty, which is why they call it the Great Salt Lake, it actually isn't sodium and chloride. The most valuable is actually magnesium. And what they can do with electrolysis is they can take that Great Salt Lake water, which is mostly sodium and chloride, they can move it to a pond, and with a different membrane, they can leach off the magnesium chloride. Then they move the water to the next pond and pull off the potassium chloride. Then they move it to the next pond. And so it's actually the magnesium that they can then turn into metal magnesium or supplements is the more valuable part of the Great Salt Lake. Similar, if you and I had a dairy farm and we took the cream off the milk and sold that first, now arguably that cream and maybe even the colostrum are the more valuable parts of that milk. And with salt, kind of similar. And a lot of, you know, even though you can pull off the cream and sell it separately, some would say maybe that's not the best, especially when we're talking about baby nutrition. And with salt, it's the kind of the same thing, is we need those other electrolytes and not just that pure sodium and chloride.
Okay. And this is why, like, your ancient unrefined sea salt that comes from the Redmond mines is superior, because it does already have small amounts of those other minerals in it. Because so there's no pulling off leaching electrolysis situation that you guys are doing. You're just mine. I mean, I don't know. Earlier, like for those that are watching on YouTube, you'll have seen this, but earlier, in case you're not watching, you lifted up like a huge hunk of what I'm assuming is salt. It looks like a crystal. It looks like a chunk of, like, you'd go buy it in a crystal shop, but that's just like a hunk of salt. And so when you guys get those from the mines, what do you do next? You just break it into little tiny pieces?
Yeah. I mean, you could do the entire process with a hammer outside of your toolbox and the screen in your kitchen window. And all we do is we break it off the wall in a crystal form. That's about 98% sodium and chloride with about 2% mineral. And then we just break it apart, like if you were to throw it in your flour mill or your Vitamix. And then we screen it just to make sure the particle sizes are all the same size. And so we have a larger screen that we would call coarse. We have a little finer screen that we call kosher, which is a size designation, not a religious designation. And then there's a smaller particle that we call fine. And then we have one that's like powder, almost like confectioner's sugar. When it comes to salt, the size of the particle does make a difference. Now, if we were to put a hard tack candy in our mouth, and let's say that was I've got a salt crystal here, but if we were to put like a Jolly Rancher in our mouth, the old candy, your tongue is only tasting the outside edges of that cube. If you were to take that and pulverize it and turn it into confectioner sugar, and you put both of those volumes in your mouth, the Jolly Rancher, the candy, is going to taste a lot less strong because your tongue isn't only tasting the outside edge. So when it comes to salt, if we're doing something like pretzels, and we want a little pretzel-sized salt, or maybe we're doing edamame and we want that little crunch on those edamame pods, a kosher-sized crystal is going to taste sweeter and dissolve slower on the tongue versus if you and I were going to make some sprouted almonds or some popcorn. If we use the powder-sized, we can actually use less and get a stronger flavor because of the size of the crystal that is getting exposed to the tongue. So that's really the only difference.
This is so funny. This is way more intense than I thought. I mean, I don't know why of course it would be this intense, but I just thought of a nickname for you, which I don't know if you've been called this before, but you're like the sommelier of salt.
I haven't, but I like it.
Yeah, like just the amount of knowledge that you have about this and the little, you're so right though, that yeah, sometimes coarse salt, you look at it and you're like, oh my gosh, that's going to be disgusting. That's going to overpower and be so salty. But then or flake salt, sometimes, you know, flake salt's so big, but it actually doesn't end up being that way. It's like, not that bad. It's really nice.
And it's all based on how the tongue is reacting to that surface area that's being exposed to the tongue. And so you can have a lot of different size crystals, and we're actually playing with a flake salt. We have right now, our main four is the coarse that you might put in a pepper grinder or a salt grinder. Now, you don't get any benefit of grinding salt as far as, it's not any fresher like it would be with a cracked pepper where you're actually breaking that husk. The nice thing about a grinder is a lot of grinders, you can actually change the size. So you could go from a smaller or bigger. Then there's the kosher size. Now, kosher is kind of fun because there's two meanings of kosher. If any of the audience is Jewish or has any Jewish ancestry, they would understand that there's this terminology in the first five books of the Old Testament with the Torah, with the Jewish law of health. And in the Jewish law of health, blood is not clean. It's not kosher. And so if you're Jewish, you can't eat blood or a bunch of other things that are mentioned in the Old Testament. Well, salt is hygroscopic, meaning it sucks water out of the air. So if I put this crystal on your desk in a very humid day in Florida, it's actually going to be a dehumidifier because it's hygroscopic. It sucks water out of the air. And because of that, salt's job in the body, we can talk about this in a second, is to regulate the intracellular and extracellular fluids. And it does that because it's hygroscopic. And so if you put a salt crystal on a big piece of meat, this is obviously like a microscope version, that salt crystal is going to suck the blood out of the meat. And blood is not kosher. And so a piece of koshering salt will suck blood out of meat and not make the meat overly salty. So it's known as koshering salt. So that flake that we have come to know as kosher salt, it's actually, that size is defined because it will make meat kosher. It'll suck blood out of meat. Now, it turns out that size is also really good for edamame and margarita rimmers and pretzels. And it's also good for a baked potato crust and a prime rib rub. But that's why it's called kosher salt, is because of the Old Testament.
That is so cool.
One little side note is there is, some people get confused, there is something called kosher certified. And so food manufacturers will allow a rabbi to come to the facility. He doesn't do any type of sacrament or religious or anything. The rabbi just comes through to make sure, like a health inspector, comes through to make sure whatever you're doing, you're washing your hands and you're not potentially exposing the product to blood if it were a product, like in a multi-use facility. And so our salt, actually, if you look at the back, like many products, I'm showing a shaker here, but there's this little OU, which is the Orthodox Union, that will actually come once a year and they inspect our facility. They just walk in to make sure we're washing our hands and we're using hairnets and we're not exposing the product. But if the product, this one says fine, I don't have a kosher jar. Our kosher one has a red lid. So our red lid that we sell as kosher salt is kosher sized salt that's also kosher certified. Or you could have a kosher certified salt like this one is, but it's not kosher sized. So I'm kind of geeking out.
It's fine. It's like a different grain size. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That is so cool. Okay. So electrolytes are trending, yes, but they have been in need of our human bodies for all of time. And if you're drinking another popular and delicious salty electrolyte, here's why you should be drinking Relight instead. First of all, have you ever considered the salt source of these other brands? Because most of them just use table salt. Yeah, table salt. You don't want that. Redmond's Relight Powders uses their unrefined ancient sea salt that they mine in Utah. This salt source contains 60 plus trace minerals along with calcium, chloride, potassium, and magnesium in two different forms, glycinate and malate. The minerals that they use in the Relight Powders are all in the appropriate proportions and forms too. The metabolic needs of pregnancy, healing postpartum, and milk making require more minerals than in other times of your life. Pregnancy itself demands huge increases in your blood volume, which takes, more minerals. Relight is the perfect blend to be sipping during your pregnancy or during your labor even, and especially while you're breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, lemon lime, and the strawberry lemonade. But you can try a sample pack and try all the flavors for yourself and see what you think. Use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% on your entire Redmond order. That includes their OG sea salt, other seasonings, bentonite clays, toothpaste, and more. Now you're making me want to go into like salt being bad for you and that idea and high blood pressure and this whole thing. And like you mentioned, how we've gone through this fad of knowing or thinking that everything high fat was going to be the worst thing ever. And that, or sorry, low fat was what we needed to do because fat was the villain. And then now we've come back around to be like, no, it's actually not. And kind of seems like sugar's bad. But then there's some people that think sugar's not bad. And then it's like, how do we, you know, manage all of this? Obviously we know deep down humans must consume salt. And I think most of my audience is pretty hip to the fact that a sea salt is going to be superior in certain ways. But there's going to be people who are like, well, why does it matter? Who cares? Why do we want to like spend the extra time and potentially money and effort in getting some kind of like a sea salt when I could just buy table salt? And then also like, isn't salt bad for you? So let's talk about those ideas.
So there's three things that we're going to cover in that section. Now, the first one is, how did salt start to become targeted as something that's bad for us? You know, if you think about before we had the refrigerator, all of us would have eaten more salt. And yet in the 1950s, there was a study that came out, and that study in the 1950s is really why people heard salt's bad. This 1954 study, I can send you a copy.
Oh my gosh, he's holding it up to the camera. You have it printed out.
But in this study in the 1950s, scientists knew that salt, it can impact the cellular fluids. And so because of that, these researchers said, hey, let's take these mice and let's inject them with 20 times the amount of sodium that is healthy for a mouse, and let's see what happens. And so they did this, and sure enough, when you take a mouse and inject it with 20 times the amount of sodium that is recommended for a mouse, and you deprive it from water, my golly, that mouse has a lot of problems, because our bodies use salt and water to balance itself. In fact, in the hospital, you could get, you know, gallons or liters of saline solution pumped through you, and you won't overdose on it. If you have healthy kidneys, your kidneys can process an insane amount of solution if it's balanced. You'd need a catheter, but your body can process this because our kidneys are designed to do that. But if you inject a mouse with 20 times its safe amount and then deprive it from water, then there is absolutely cause to point a finger. And so that study in the 1950s is how that launched forward. And then if you start thinking about the foods that are highly salted, because salt is an excellent and very inexpensive preservative. And so we can take a food that we shouldn't really be eating and douse it in copious amounts of processed salt. And then between the poor nutrition and the high trans and all of the stuff that's happened to that item, it's not necessarily a natural potato and the natural salt. But when we take that potato, now we fry it in oils that we shouldn't be eating. And then we put copious amounts of salt that had been highly processed. That's very different from what our ancestors or what from a mouse would normally eat. And so there was this study that kind of that, some of those early studies that said that fat, that all fat was bad. There was that in salt. But when it comes to salt, there's two challenges. The first one is, we kind of covered it earlier, is a lot of salt in nature occurs as a complex chloride. And so salt manufacturers can manipulate that and refine out some of those other important minerals and elements we need. Now, seawater was never supposed to be a dietary source of potassium, even though there's some there. And, you know, natural salts aren't meant to be a dietary source of iodine, even though natural salts do have natural levels and a good amount, considering, of iodine in natural salt. The bigger problem, though, comes to that discussion we had on hygroscopic ability of salt. So Salt in nature, like I mentioned earlier, is hygroscopic, which means it sucks water out of the air. And that's okay because salt's job in the body is to interact with that intercellular and extracellular solution through the sodium potassium pump. And we can talk about the problems with the American diet and the lack of potassium in a second. But when it comes to salt, salt crystals are going to always be absorbing water out of the air. And so years ago, a couple of salt companies got together and said, what kind of chemicals could we coat the salt crystals with to stop their ability to interact with moisture? And there's a whole list of them. What they should have asked is, should we do something to stop salt's ability to interact with moisture? Because that's salt's job in the body. And what they found was a whole list of chemicals, things like sodium silicoaluminate, similar to the antiperspirant, that you can coat that crystal with and you can stop its ability to interact with moisture. Now, our grandmothers had the same problem, but rather than adding chemicals, they would just put a little bit of rice in the shaker if you lived in Hawaii or Florida.
These processed salts that have this on them, it also prevents the salt from interacting with water even once you eat it, or a little bit less.
Yeah. But if you're coating that crystal with something like sodium silicoaluminate or yellow prussiated soda, which is sodium ferrocyanide, and you coat that crystal with that and you stop its ability to interact with moisture, then the salt companies came up with this really fun campaign that, and you've probably seen it, where the little girl's walking down the street and it's raining outside and she has a little umbrella and she's walking and the salt's trickling out of the shaker. And the tagline is, when it rains, it pours. Because when it rains outside, the salt will still pour out of the shaker. That campaign was designed around the chemicals that can be added to salt to stop its ability to interact with moisture. Now, these chemicals aren't very nice. Sodium silicoaluminate, sodium ferrocyanide. But in small amounts, it was determined it was safe. And so that's really the twofold problem when it comes to salt. Or that maybe the threefold. One, salt is used as a cheap preservative on foods that we probably shouldn't be eating. That's a big problem, especially if we're eating out of cans and we're eating out of boxes and we're not making food at home. And then the second problem is the salt that you're using to salt your food is probably somewhat demineralized. But the bigger challenge is it probably also has an ingredient list. And if your salt has an ingredient list, or you're getting salt from the soup can or the box, you know, you might be getting too much salt if you were eating processed foods all day long. You'd have to work at it because you can safely consume a high amount of salt. In fact, there's some studies that I can show you from the American Journal of Medicine that shows that sodium consumption of less than 2,300 milligrams, which is the daily recommended allowance, sodium intake of less than that amount resulted in a 430% increase in myocardial infarctions because of the impact on salt in the body. And the bigger challenge is salt actually really helps when it comes to your body's ability to process insulin. And so what we find now is when somebody switches to a low salt diet, their insulin resistance spikes, their ability to digest food drops because our bodies require chloride to make hydrochloric acid to be able to digest our food. So if you have a low salt diet, not only are you going to start struggling with muscle cramps, fatigue, brain fog, all kinds of muscular and cellular issues, but then you'll also have insulin resistance, and then you'll also have poor digestion because our bodies are saline solution in motion, and we would never deprive a patient in the hospital of saline solution. In fact, we know that.
Yeah, this is such a classic modern human problem where we're like, salt's the problem after we inject mice with 20 times the amount that they need and give them no water. And then we're like, see, it's salt. And then we're like putting salt all over things. You know, I'm thinking of Spam and bologna and processed meats and different things that are going to be higher in that kind of way, and thinking to ourselves that, oh, it must be the salt, that's the reason. And it's out of balance with the other electrolytes. It's not the way that it would be in nature or in the natural world. And I don't know this, I'm going to go off on a tangent really fast about the Brewer's diet. I don't know if you've heard of that, if you're familiar, but those that are pregnant or are maybe have been pregnant in the past, or specifically those with a past history of preeclampsia, might find this interesting. So the Brewer's diet is one angle in which we can attempt to manage preeclampsia risk or high blood pressure in pregnancy. It may not be a preeclamptic high blood pressure in pregnancy. There's two different potential conditions that can occur in that way. But so Dr. Brewer was a doctor back in the day who kind of observed different populations in the way that they were eating and what was going on. And so his diet is really, it's like unrestricted calories. It's like at least 2,500 calories per day. Unrestricted salt, adding to food, a lot of water, and then specifically also like about 100 grams of protein per day. Because in his mind, his theory, a lot of women who become pregnant and now there's this increase in blood volume, and the body needs to keep this set point of this increase in blood volume. And if at any point, usually in the second or third trimester, potentially there's maybe the woman is eating less, she becomes dehydrated over a period of many weeks, or she's not eating as much protein, or something where there is a noticeable blood volume drop going on in the body, or we're not able to maintain this higher volume that the body wants and expects, it will do what it needs to do compensatorily to get it higher. So it will constrict blood vessels. Now we have a little bit of a higher blood pressure. Also for the point in the way that our bodies naturally control for postpartum hemorrhage. So if we're losing blood and we're losing blood volume, what do we do to like try to stop that as we constrict our blood vessels and we get it to stop? So the Brewer's diet is twofold in terms of how it increases the blood volume. One, with a protein. When you have more protein, you have more building blocks of amino acids to make yet other additional proteins. And in his theory, he's like, let's have enough protein on board in order for the liver to make albumin. Albumin is a very thick, sticky, viscous type of protein that sits in the matrix of plasma, and it helps to hold the water suspend the water of the blood volume. And then also, but it's a protein. So we need to make it with other proteins. It's not like you eat albumin and it's immediately going to go into your blood. It doesn't work that way. You have to eat protein. They break down into amino acids. They go all around in your liver. You're going to be making these. But in order to synthesize that, in addition to growing a baby and all the other body changes that are going on in pregnancy, it takes a lot of protein. So then though, with his unrestricted salt access, which is the opposite of what you're going to find in a lot of populations who are not pregnant with high blood pressure situations, is because it helps to maintain the blood volume with the water interacting in the blood and keep it all this beautiful high matrix so that we don't constrict and then have higher blood pressure. And anecdotally, there isn't any like real well, you know, controlled studies that have gone on, but there is a couple where he's looked at things and it just needs to be studied more. And of course it's not going to be because there's no money in that, but that's neither here nor there. But working with midwives and working in this space and hearing about it anecdotally and even having friends of mine starting to see their blood pressure creep up and up and up throughout that second trimester, early third trimester, they implement Brewer's diet and it starts to go back down. And it's really fascinating because it all has to do with the way that our bodies interact with this physiologically purposeful increase in blood volume. So anyway, I just wanted to say that because it has to do with salt too. And also like salt in matrix and in harmony with all of the other minerals, like no situation is salt outside of a harmony of other minerals, whether it's the ocean or it's the salt coming closer to the surface and the animals are digging it up, like whatever it is, you know what I mean? It's always, and that's a similar thing too with fat and protein. There's like no situations in naturally occurring in the wild where there is just protein without any fat. I mean, there are leaner proteins, but like even chicken skin, like you're not going to, you know what I mean? Eating the chicken with the skin. And then how does that help with all of the synthesizing of the nutrients? And then, you know, having your vitamin A in conjunction with vitamin D, and how that helps to prevent vitamin D, you know, all these things, because people want to just take one isolated thing and just be like, hey, now we're going to only take our sodium chloride. And it's like, no, but what about everything else? And this is where, as a naturopathic doctor, we love using herbs, because herbs are usually the basis of most pharmaceuticals anyways. It's just one particular compound in a plant that they've taken and singled out. And then now they're making it in like mass production so that they can make a pharmaceutical. But to backtrack and be like, well, hold on. Yes, maybe this is the one compound that is most responsible for the physiological change in the body. When it works in synergy with all of the other compounds that are complementary to it, now we have way less side effects because we're not just taking this one thing and pushing it so hard into the body and into the pathway. It just, all of this just makes so much intuitive sense to me about the way of the natural world and how it's perfect when we live within it. And it is not perfect right now in the modern way that we're living. And so we have to really be our own advocates And that's the whole point of our podcast, really, is like we have to be our own advocates. Like, sorry, you have to learn this yourself. You have to do it yourself. You cannot just lean back and trust all of the different other external sources because they're not complete. It's not that they're usually fully lying. They're just usually not complete, or they're missing things, or they're missing context, or it's not a conversation you can have in a 7-minute appointment or whatever. And with Saul, it's the same thing. It's like, no, you guys, this does matter. Think about it for more than 5 seconds about where this is coming from. If it's such a vital component of our lives and of our, you know, and people ask me all the time with Relight, can I drink it when I'm pregnant? Can I drink it when I'm breastfeeding? And I'm always like, yes, it's encouraged. Like, please, please give your body these electrolytes, because so many people are just drinking tap water, or like you called it before we started recording, dead water. And I want to talk about that too, because natural populations of humans would be drinking water out of springs, and springs contain the slew of electrolytes, you know, and minerals that we have to now replace with something like Relight, because we're not getting it. So let's talk about that for a sec.
I love your discussion there on foods, because if we look at our human ancestors, you know, we wouldn't have, I love raspberries. And so I can go to the store and I could buy a whole bushel of raspberries and I could eat those all at once, which isn't how our ancestors would have done it. And there's a cost. Like when I was a little kid, when I'd go to my grandmother's raspberry bush, there's a cost involved, not only taking the time to harvest them, but I'm getting poked. And so I'm not going to sit there, and maybe a bear would, but I'm not going to sit there and overdose on raspberries like I can now, even though raspberries are good for me. You know, honey's the same way. You know, it's very different to go to your, you know, cupboard and just grab a jar of honey and eat the whole thing versus if our ancestors, like, hey, there's a cost involved. I used to be a beekeeper. And so getting honey isn't as easy as it is now. And salt was kind of the same way. And so if we look at the way we're consuming foods, if we have ultra processed orange juice, that's very different from me sitting down and eating a bushel of oranges with all of the other cofactors, with all of the fiber, with all of the different complexes, versus just, you know, drinking pure orange juice, which arguably is going to really spike my insulin, very different from eating the same volume of oranges that it would have taken to make that single year cup of orange juice. And so I love the idea of listening to our bodies. And salt, I think a lot of people think they're craving sugar. And so I've noticed that myself. When I'm really intentional, I'll be home. Maybe I think, what really sounds good is a bunch of sugar right now. And if I take a salt crystal and put it under my tongue, it actually tastes sweet if I am lacking salt. And so what I encourage people to do, you know, not only drink lots of water, but if you're starting to feel like a headache coming on, instead of reaching for whatever headache pharmaceutical, try a quarter teaspoon of salt under your tongue and a big glass of water. Because oftentimes, because of the volume of water in our brains, dehydration really shows up as a headache and irritability early on. And so when that first happens, maybe a big glass of Relight for your kids might be the first, if they're getting ornery and, you know, miserable and, you know, they don't feel well, you know, a big glass of Relight or a big glass of make your own salt solution might be a better place to start than some comfort foods or something else. Because oftentimes our bodies do misunderstand a craving for salt as a craving for sugar.
Yeah, I definitely notice that myself, and I get an energy boost when I drink it. Like, I think this happened, I don't know, it wasn't yesterday, it was like maybe 2 days ago. And I was just feeling so tired, and I had been drinking regular water, but I made an electrolyte drink, and I really was like, this is not a placebo. This is very noticeable. It's the same thing for me. And I don't do this very often, but like once in a while, and I used to more, I'll take like liver capsules, and they acutely give me energy in the moment. Like 30 minutes after, I'm like, wow, that is amazing. There is something to these very, very dense nutritive boosts that we can give our bodies, and how they interact with so many different systems that are slogging or maybe not working as well, or just need a little bit of power. And we can do that in a way that's in line with, you know, I don't know, it, like being natural, but it just makes sense. It's like, okay, we'll take some salt or like eat some organ meats, like instead of drinking another cup of coffee, which does have its cost as well, like you said.
Well, and when it comes to water, I think it's really interesting because if we look, as you mentioned, you know, we went back thousands of years ago, our ancestors wouldn't have walked into a grocery store and bought a plastic jug full of water that's maybe sat there for 2 months, 3 months, maybe a year. And when water sits, you know, it, if you've ever had a fish tank, you know that you can't put fish in a fish tank and expect them to live if there's not a bubbler, because fish actually are actively using the oxygen in that water. Now, we don't have gills and we're not using water that way, but our bodies, even anecdotally, to me, I can go and drink spring water that's right out of a spring on the mountain. I'm up, you know, enjoying the outdoors. Or I can drink water that's gone through an oxygenator or an ionizer to help, you know, add more oxygen to that water. And I can drink a quart of it and I don't get that belly slosh that I do that if I drink a quart of water that's just out of a tap or that's just sitting there in a gallon jug that maybe I bought at a grocery store. To me, then I start feeling that, ugh, I drank too much water and I feel like that sloshy feeling. And I know that's anecdotal, but I do know that if you look at, if you fill a cup out of a gurgling mountain spring, you'll see bubbles working their way up out of that bottle as the oxygen is being released, which is very different from a bottle that sat there for long, long time. And you can also see that with an ionizer or a structured water machine. And I'm not a water expert, but I do think there's something to that, having a natural oxygenated water versus one that our ancestors would have never recognized or ever used if they had the choice of a spring water. Now, unfortunately, today we have, you know, especially if we're living in a big city, we're going to flush or drain water one day, and it's probably going to be coming back out of the faucet, you know, a day or two later as it goes through all of those cleansings. And years ago, this was discovered that some of these municipalities ended up having trace pharmaceuticals in their tap water because people were thinking, oh, I finished my pills. I don't need them for my surgery. I'll just dump these down the drain to avoid them getting in my kids' hands or maybe avoid, you know, them ending up on the market. I'm just going to flush these, which sounded like a good idea until we realized that flushing those down the municipal system, trace amounts and back in the water supply. So we said, well, let's maybe use things like reverse osmosis or distillation to avoid these chemicals and bad things. And I totally agree with that. We want to avoid that. The challenge, though, is if we're drinking water out of a mountain spring, water is the universal solvent. And so water is going to be picking up magnesium, calcium, potassium. So we get all of these minerals in natural water that our ancestors would have drank that we don't have in distilled water or in RO water. In fact, there's a fun experiment I'll do with kids. If I'm doing this at a school, you can buy a bottle of Aquafina, which is a reverse osmosis water. Take the lid off, take about a quarter teaspoon of kosher salt and just drop it in the top of that bottle. And about 4 seconds later, the water looks like it's boiling, because the water is dissolving that salt crystal so aggressively, it's releasing oxygen bubbles in the water. And that's why in a house, you would never put an RO system at the point of entry. You always put the RO system at point of use. So it'll be under your kitchen counter, because if you strip the water right as it comes into your house, that water is actively trying to dissolve everything it can through all of your pipes, copper, plastic, whatever, because the water is hungry water, because it wants to be in homeostasis. In a river, you're picking, or a gurgling mountain spring, you're getting that naturally. And when you do that, that's why your point of use RO system will always be under your kitchen sink and not at the city side, because of the way the water is trying to go back into a structure, to a natural state, which RO and distilled isn't.
As we are talking about birth and postpartum support, I want to share with you Needed, my favorite reproductive health nutrition brand. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally demanding phases of a woman's entire life. And many women stop their prenatal after birth. But as a naturopathic doctor, I actually recommend continuing it for at least the first 9 months postpartum, or the entire time you are breastfeeding, whichever one is longer. Needed's Prenatal Multi is the most robust formula I've ever seen, and that's important because if you're going to take the time to prioritize supplements, you want it to count. It contains bioavailable nutrients in their evidence-based dosages, which are well above the bare minimums that we are seeing in most prenatals. Their quality standards are also top tier, with transparent sourcing, rigorous third-party testing, and that's why over 10,000 practitioners now recommend Needed. Now, also, they have the results from their IRB-approved clinical study, which confirms what we have seen clinically. Women who take their Needed Prenatal Multi have significantly higher blood levels of nutrients critical for postpartum and beyond, including vitamin D, B6, B12, riboflavin, K2, and selenium. Only women in the Needed group reach the sufficient levels of vitamin D, which plays a big role in immune health, energy production, and mood regulation, all things that are very important during that postpartum season. So while there are many ways that you can support yourself postpartum, continuing your prenatal is one of the simplest and most impactful habits, and Needed makes that easy. Learn more about the study at thisisneeded.com/thrive, and you can use the code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Yes, healthy mother, like a little affirmation or mantra, because you deserve it. Okay, I'm so glad you said that because so many of our listeners have reverse osmosis systems. And like you said, I do agree that they are a good one in terms of stripping away, you know, heavy metals, pharmaceuticals, pesticides, everything. But it leaves it in this hungry state. I love that idea because what I would always say is like depleted. It's depleted of things. And so then it's just a chemical reaction. It's chemistry. It has to suck things. It's like a polar liquid now where it wants to suck things into it to kind of create a balance because it's out of balance. So you either must, if you have a reverse osmosis system, there's options on some of them to add the minerals back before it gets to your sink, which is great because then you don't have to do anything. If you're not doing that or you don't have that kind of a system, then you must add minerals to every cup of water that you drink. I really believe this because otherwise it's going to get into your system. And I don't think that that is a good thing over time because it's going to leach instead of give. It's going to try to pull out to get into this homeostatic place. Spring water, because it's a full system, isn't going to do that.
And our bodies, if we go back to early grade school, we would have learned that our bodies are 72% water. Now, maybe in pregnancy, it's even different. I don't know. But if we used 72% outside of a spiritual discussion, I am really just, if I'm 150 pounds, so at 72%, I'm 108 pounds of water and I'm 42 pounds of mineral. Outside of a spiritual discussion, that's really all that I am, is 108 pounds of water, 42 pounds of mineral, and an electric current that kind of makes everything fire with the electrolysis. So if I am drinking distilled water or reverse osmosis water because I'm really worried about all of the chemicals, and rightly so, my tears are still going to be salty. My urine will still be salty. My sweat will still be salty, even though I'm drinking distilled or non-salty water. And so every time I do that, my body, just like when you mentioned the baby, our bodies are smart enough to keep us alive. And so if we're drinking a lot of that demineralized water, and because that balance of electrolytes is so important in the intercellular and extracellular fluids and in our plasma and in our blood, our bodies will start to dissolve minerals out of our jaw. When we see a lot of people used to call it receding gums. In fact, the gums don't recede. It's actually the bone that's receding because our bodies are pulling the minerals out of our bodies, our bones. And in pregnancy, we see this more, right? My mother, she had 8 kids. I'm one of 8. And her teeth, unfortunately, on each pregnancy got a little worse. Every pregnancy, her body was losing minerals because of a number of factors, even if she was trying to do everything right, which I'm sure she was.
There's a phrase about that. It's gain a child, lose a tooth.
Oh, really? I never
heard. There's a whole, yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, and we know that in pregnancy, and I feel kind of like I'm out of my element because you know your market in this a lot better than I do. I'm a father of 3, but I didn't go through what my wife had to go through. But even as a male, I am still losing bones and minerals if I were to drink, you know, distilled or reverse osmosis water, if I'm not actively replacing those. And so I think that the water that we drink, we just need to be intentional about it. There is nothing wrong with reverse osmosis water as long as we're going out of our way to make sure we're replacing potentially lost calcium, potassium, magnesium, and sodium that are all occurring in natural waters that unfortunately end up with a lot of other stuff in our systems today.
Yeah. And if for anybody interested, you can go to, did you say earlier it was called springs.com?
I can't remember if it's Springs or Wells. It's been a while since I've looked, but
yeah, there's a website. It's okay. They can find it. There's a website where you can go and type in your zip code and find where there are natural spring sources near you. There might be, you know, if you're in a more rural area or near mountains, it'll be easier access than if you're on the plains or something. I don't know.
It's Find a Spring.
Oh, findaspring.com. Okay, beautiful. Yeah. So findaspring.com allows you to go and you can fill up your own, you know, if you have like those big plastic jugs, if you had glass, that'd be great. One of my husband's friends comes through here often when he's driving. He like sort of halftime lives between like the Pacific Northwest and Utah. And so he drives through Idaho a lot and he'll stay with us. And he always has his huge glass jug of water. And he only ever drinks spring water that he fills up in these places. And at first I was just like, I kind of would roll my eyes and be like, whatever, you know, because everybody has their things that like they don't care about or the things that they really do care about. And where's their tipping point, their threshold? Everyone is going to be different on this. And now, I mean, he's kind of always ahead of the curve, I feel, in everything that he does. And sometimes I'm like, oh, like whatever, it doesn't matter. But then we have these kinds of conversations and I'm like, no, this really does matter. I mean, it really, really does. And we have to think about chronic disease and longevity and all sorts of different things wrapped and tied up into this, that if we're, it's a little similar, not exactly the same, but you know, there's this analogy about car fuel. If you're always putting the wrong fuel in your car, it's going to run, but it's not going to run great. And it's probably going to die a lot sooner. And that would maybe pertain more to diet, but hydration and water is lumped into that too. And it's the same thing where if we want to be functioning completely optimally, living in line with the way that our bodies adapted and expected to live. And this is, you know, a conversation I have a lot with women too, where it's like, if we're having a baby, we need to expect newborn sleep to be the way that a newborn is going to sleep. Like your newborn is not going to do X, Y, and Z thing that you read about in the book. If you want to force them to do it, you can. There's a cost. You can do that, but it's not natural. It's not in line. It's not what they come to expect. And in my opinion, it's not right thinking unless we're in a very desperate place, because we need to understand and just come to terms with the reality, which is that that's not how it is. You cannot bring a dog into your home and then only feed them like rice. Like a dog is a carnivore, an omnivore at best, but a carnivore. Like they expect to be fed the right things. They expect, just like there's, you know, these studies about sharks in captivity have never lived past like a certain number of years. And it's very low. It's way lower than you would think. Like sharks just do not do well in captivity. And it's like, well, no duh. When I think about how many miles they would be roaming every day and like what they would be doing with their bodies and, you know, or killer whales are just so sad, like sitting in SeaWorld. And humans are the same way. Like these modern things that we do all the time are dysfunctional. It is a dysfunctional society. I'm not saying that to be alarmist. I'm not saying that to be like, poo-poo, you know, everything sucks, we're all going to die. I'm saying that to be inspiring and empowering people and arming them with knowledge to say, okay, I have to actively make different choices. I have to actively leave my house. Like there are times where some people don't even see grass. My husband and I were just in San Francisco last weekend for one day and we saw literally no grass. And we were looking for it. And he even made a joke. He's like, you couldn't find a blade of grass in the city if you spent all day. Like, it's just not the way that it's supposed to be. And yes, do people live in San Francisco? They love it. They have fun. Yes, 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 yes. But you have to understand too, that there's going to be a cost there, a nature deficit cost, which is now like a well-known thing. And all of this comes into play when it comes to water and salt and every little microcosm to the macrocosm of anything really that you want to think about, with how do we like actively, intentionally, as you said, make the best choice in this modern society. Reverse osmosis is great. You just have to put the minerals back in. And if you don't, then now we're having a problem. But I find, unfortunately, that a lot of people don't know that. I don't know if the reverse osmosis companies are not educating people about it, or they don't mention it. Maybe they don't care. They don't think it's part of their shtick. But I really think they should, if they're going to do their due diligence to say, hey, okay, well, now you strip this water. It's beautiful. It's super clean. But you have, you know, now we need to make it alive again because it's kind of dead in that way. Anyway, okay, that was my tangent. I had to just say it.
I love the tangent. When you were speaking, I was thinking not only like in your San Francisco example, there's a cost negative every day. Like if you look at our ancestors, how many miles would have our great-great-great-grandmothers or grandfathers walked every day? And today, most people struggle to get a half a mile in. And so I think, you know, if you could get out and just intentionally got out for a 30 minute or ideally an hour, can you imagine if everybody in the U.S. got out and went on an hour walk with their meaningful friend or significant other? I mean, not only would you get the mobility, which so many people struggle with, especially as we age because we haven't been walking regularly, but just being outside and smelling the air and connecting with another human, you know, just an hour walk every day would probably be one of the best medicines that any doctor could prescribe.
I fully agree. And it reminds me of, I heard this recently, I'd heard it before, but the idea that there, you really have two hearts. You have like your actual heart, the organ, and then you have your calves. And for longevity and with the elderly population, their calves being able to pump the blood then back up to their heart because it's the lowest point in the body and they have to pump up against, like venous return doesn't have arterial musculature around it.
Wow, that's really insightful.
Isn't that interesting? I know. So it was like, you really have two hearts. You have your calves and you have your actual heart. So if you're not walking, you're not using them. And think about elderly people and their calves. They atrophy and then they have these, you know, congestive heart failures. They have different heart, whatever it is. So like, I mean, just even from that one point, that one perspective. And as you said too, if you could habit stack it, if you could stack it where you're walking in nature with people that you love, how many beautiful rippling effects would that have? The unfortunate aspect of humans in general, and then specifically Americans, I think, is that we are such a convenience culture. And the noticeable impacts of a habit like that are going to be slower. And like, I don't know, you'd have to be really digging to find it, to see it. It's just something that you would do because that's what's right. Like, that's just what you do. That's what you should do. I lived in Sweden for a year as an exchange student, and I was so blown away by the workout culture of the elderly population. Like, I would go to the gym and everybody there would be like 65 to 85. And it's not because I was at an older person's gym. It was just like maybe the time of day that I was there. I don't know, something. And I was like, wow. I mean, and there was no negotiating this. This was every single person. There was no obesity. There was no, and their recycling systems were beautiful. And it was just like as clear as, you know, you go pee and poop in the toilet, like, oh, well, you work out and you recycle at these really insane huge centers where they would drive their cars up and then put like colored glass, clear glass, like this kind of plastic, whatever. And they just were, it was just worked into the culture in a different kind of a way that we don't really have here.
If you are looking for a simple, natural way to nourish your body and support your hormones and fertility, look no further than Fawn Regenerative. Fawn crafts time-honored foundational foods like bone broth, tallow, and lard that reclaim vital nourishment. Their bone broth is slow simmered over 18 hours with equal parts bones and water for maximal nutrient extraction. Did you know that most other brands don't even make their bone broth from scratch? This is gut nourishment in a jar, which is essential for supporting your hormones and fertility. They are special because they use verified regenerative animal ingredients and organic infusion ingredients. You get pure, clean food bottled in glass, no concentrates, no powders ever. I'm really picky about bone broth, and I love that I can simply sip Fawn's bone broth, and it's absolutely delicious. If you are fond of your fertility and your hormones, and you want to nourish yourself from the inside out, I highly recommend you check out Fawn. Just sip it or use it as your sous chef in any of your recipes. Visit FawnRegenerative.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 10% off your first order and start your Fawn foundation. Again, that's FawnRegenerative.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER.
Okay, so the one that I want to ask that I know a lot of people have concerns about is heavy metals. Heavy metals and salt, lead, lead and salt, independent lead testers finding lead and salt and whatever, whatever. So can we talk about that and what do we think and what's to be expected? I mean, heavy metals are on they're in our earth, they're in the crust, they're in the rocks, like that's what they are. Is it okay? Is it not okay? Does Redmond have it, et cetera?
Love the question. And because we live on the planet Earth, we're going to be exposed to the elements that are in the planet Earth. Aluminum is like the third most abundant element on Earth. And so we're going to have it. Lead's, I think, the number 15. And so if you look at the total diet study, so every year the FDA will go through and they study a bunch of different foods and see what's the protein levels, what's the calcium levels, and as part of that they also look at the heavy metals. And so here is, for those that are able to look at this, This is the total diet study, FDA total diet study for arsenic. And then there's a column for parts per billion. And then there's a column for micrograms per serving. And so in this case, and I can send you a copy of it, but if you were to have rice, baby rice cereal, the parts per billion of arsenic is 109. This is the average on the study, which means in 4 ounces, that's 12 micrograms. Now, fortunately, our bodies are able to process natural amounts of these metals because they've been around since the dawn of time. Now, this is very different from the lead, like in lead-based paint or refined minerals, because they're attached as a compound. And in the body, these compounds don't all interact the same. For instance, sodium is a very caustic, very alkaline metal, and chloride or chlorine is a very acidic gas. And yet you put them together and sodium and chloride act differently. Aluminum is the same way. You can have processed aluminum that acts very different from an aluminum silicate that's bound into a clay particle that the body, because of the electric charge, cannot absorb. And so that's the first element, or the first idea, is that every element you see is not pure and refined. And so that's challenge one. The second thing is our bodies, thankfully, can process certain amounts. In terms of arsenic, the FDA says you can process 2 milligrams per kilogram of body weight per day. So an older person can process more than maybe a young infant, which is why the levels are different. When it comes to lead, what they do is they use a number that's 10 times the safe amount. So here is an example of the safe amounts for pregnancy and women. And what they have is the safe amount for females of childbearing age is 88 micrograms per day of lead. 88 micrograms. Now, and they use a safety factor of 10 to say ideally you get less than 8.8. But 88 is the safe amount. And for a young child that's less than 6, that safe amount is 22 micrograms. And they'll use an interim amount of 10 times, or a factor of 10, to say 2 is what you should shoot for. So how that means in our bodies, in the case of lead, this is that same diet study. And I know it's kind of hard to see here, but for sweet potatoes, the average amount for organic sweet potatoes is 21 parts per billion, which means parts per billion, parts per million. It's a percentage. It's not an amount. So we have to convert that by how much we're consuming to be able to convert that to micrograms, because micrograms is that number that they say is safe. 88 was the number for adults. So if I have 4 ounces of sweet potatoes at 21 parts per billion, then I'm going to get 2 micrograms of lead in that serving, which is 2, and the safe amount is 88, and I'm going to get some from my water and some from my all of my other foods. And so that's kind of the key to remember, is that natural foods have them. They always have. Fortunately, our bodies can process it. The thing that is a kind of a headline, sometimes a clickbait, is they'll say, look at water. So if we look at water, the safe amount of water is 15 parts per billion. So that's the safe amount of lead in water, is 15 parts per billion. If I'm 150 pounds and I'm drinking 75 ounces worth of water, that's half my body weight in ounces, I have to convert 15 into the 75 ounces to convert that to the micrograms I'm getting from my water. In this case, I would get 31.89 micrograms of lead at 15 parts per billion of the 88 that's safe. So they're saying, hey, you're 88 safe. You're going to get half of that from your water and probably half of that from your food. And so you're fine. Now, yes, avoid, you know, food that's raised right next to a nuclear facility or right next to a big oil refinery, because those are going to have higher amounts, and avoid lead-based paint. But there's an amount there. So the difference when it comes to salt, you know, I might drink 70 ounces of water a day. And if I eat a lot of salt, I'll probably eat 6 grams. And so the challenge comes when we're talking about metals, is we look at salt or other natural foods. In the case of salt, the amount is usually between 100 and 190 or even 200 parts per billion. And so if you're looking at parts per billion, it sounds scary because you're saying, hey, wait a second, safe water is 15, the amount in sweet potatoes is 21, and salt is 200? Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Until you convert it to micrograms per day. And if you have something that's 200 parts per billion and you're eating 6 grams of it, that works out to be 0.96 micrograms, as opposed to the 30 that I'm getting from my water, or the 4 or the 8 that I'm getting from my sweet potatoes.
Wow. Okay. That's definitely, it puts in perspective. Yeah.
It makes a great headline, but when we're looking at parts per billion, it's like saying salary or a wage, because it's a percent. And would you rather have 1% of my salary or 1% of Taylor Swift's salary? Or even 15% or 20% of my salary and 0.5% of her salary. So parts per billion and parts per million don't mean anything until we convert it to how much weight of that item are we consuming. And so, yes, we should be worried about the heavy metals, and we should be worried about the pharmaceuticals in our water supply and our food supply. But if I'm eating, you know, 10 pounds of water in a day, and I'm drinking or I'm eating, you know, 6 grams or less of salt per day, we have to convert that to milligrams per serving. And if we look at foods, like a typical food, you know, if I'm eating an 8-ounce serving of sweet potatoes, the average amount is 4 micrograms in that 1 8-ounce sweet potato, versus in my daily 6 grams of salt would be less than a single microgram. And so that's, and fortunately, our bodies can process up to that 88 amount for adults and 22 micrograms for kids that are less than 18 and over 7, and 22 micrograms for those that are younger than 6 when it comes to lead specifically.
So really, it just, you have to be able to understand these when these people come out and they say, this is how much was found in my independent third-party testing, that it's not, it doesn't have meaning until we can really see what all is going on with it, basically, is how it seems.
Yeah, unless you were looking at micrograms per serving or micrograms per daily use, that's a much better way to track it. And another illustration of that is safe water is less than 15 parts per billion. If you look at salt, the safe amount of salt is less than 2,000 parts per billion. And so the published safe amount for salt is 2,000. For salt, the published safe amount for water is 15. The published safe amount for baby food is like 5 or something like that, because baby food, assuming the baby is just getting formula and that's 100% of their diet and they only weigh 6 pounds or 7 pounds, their percentage of their diet, what they're consuming, is a lot different, which is why humans, when it comes to water, it's 15 parts per billion safe water and 2,000 parts per billion safe salt. With arsenic, it's 500 parts per billion arsenic. And you'll see salts, whether it's ours or Celtic or Himalayan, and they've got, oh my gosh, there's 80 or there's 50. And that sounds like a lot, other than the safe amount is 500, because you're eating so much smaller than if you're eating arsenic, rice that has been produced in a paddy, been close to a processing facility, and the arsenic numbers are through the roof, and you're eating 90% of your diet in rice. That's very different from a 6 grams of salt. So it's the parts per million is a percentage.
It's the scale. People need, yeah, they need to understand the scale that you're talking about and then put it into real life context. So, I mean, all in all, we're not concerned when it comes to that, which is good. Okay. And then, Daryl, we need to wrap up. But at the beginning, you said that there was 3 questions about choosing a good electrolyte. And I want to get back to that, make sure we don't miss that.
Yeah. So the 3 questions, and I think this questions, whether you're buying steak or you're buying milk or you're buying whatever, the first one is who's producing it? You know, today we can go to a grocery store and sometimes we buy a gallon of milk or we buy a jar of salt, and you have no idea who actually produced that. Even if it might say some national brand, you know, it's probably commingled in some bottling facility and you don't really know the farmer that was producing that. Even farmers markets are a little hard. There's a farmer's market here in town, and sometimes you go to the farmer's market And it looks like the guy selling it at the farmer's market was just over at the local grocer, buying it there and then reselling it at the park as farmer's market. But if you can know who's producing it, then you can ask the second question is, what's the source? Now, was it coming, if it's some sweet basil, was it grown in an aquaponic system in the backyard? Was it grown next to a chemical plant? Knowing the source can make a big difference. With salt, that's really important, because if it's a salt from a current ocean, is it coming from the Gulf of Mexico during the BP spill? Is it coming from the Mediterranean after the cruise ship went down? Is it coming off the Sea of Japan after we had the nuclear meltdown? And so knowing the source of that salt is really important. And salt's very difficult because it gets so commingled so often. We'll have all of these producers in Nepal and the Himalaya, Pakistan region shipping this pink salt, and then it shows up and it's all in big bags. And to find out who the guy was that was harvesting it and what location it was from becomes really difficult. And so if you can know the source and know who's producing it, then the second question is, what are they doing to it? Are they putting anything in? Are they taking anything out? And if I'm buying raw milk, are they putting anything into it? Are they taking any of the good parts out? If I'm buying an orange, would I buy the orange if they've already somehow extracted some of the vitamin C? Or if I was buying carrots and there was a carrot that somehow added some extra coloring or that extracted some of the beta carotene, I'd want to know that. And I think if we ask those three questions, you'll find a great salt and a great electrolyte. You might end up with Redmond. I'm biased, but you might end up with a lot of other great companies out there if you can know who's producing it, if you can know the source and then know what they're doing to it.
I love that. I think it's, and I just, obviously I was thinking about the Redmond example throughout, and that is what I love about you guys as well, is like, it comes from the mine. We know who it is. It's you guys, it's your family. We know where it is. It's all just only coming from your mine. It's not coming from multiple places all around the globe. And then we know that you're not doing anything to it or adding anything to it. And I think that, unfortunately, this is the level in which we need to be intimately tied to our food. It's something I'm trying to teach my kids. My kids are 9, 6, 5, like in a couple days, and almost 2. And so my 9-year-old is really, and my 6-year-old, I think, are both starting to really connect to the ideas, understanding, like, you know, it's starting to become fall. Our chickens are suddenly laying way less eggs. So I had to buy eggs at the store the other day for the first time in like 6 months. It's so lame. I feel so like embarrassed about my disdain for that act, but I was just so annoyed that I had to do that. And even when I'm trying to buy like pastured, you know, eggs and stuff, the yolks are just not at all as rich yellow as the ones that we have. It just feels different. I'm like, ugh. But anyway, I'm able to like have these conversations with my kids at all times about, okay, well, you ate it in and out. How do you feel? Like, how do you actually feel now? And they're both starting. My 6-year-old told me the other day she never wants to eat it in and out again because it really doesn't make her feel well. And I'm not like planting that idea. I'm asking questions. And then I am sometimes drawing the connection of, oh, you have a stomachache now. Well, what did you eat? Oh, okay. Well, maybe that makes sense. Like, maybe we can have our things within moderation. Or, okay, well, where did that come from? Yeah, how old is that? How long has that thing been dead? I know that sounds gross, but I often think about that. Like when we go to the fair or something and there's hot dogs and I'm like, okay, I love a good hot dog. I really do. But I'm like, seriously though, when did this animal die? Like, or how many animals is there inside of it? And when was that? It had been such a long time ago. And it's not to ruin the experience. It's just to, yeah, cultivate awareness and start to have these thoughts in our heads about all of the different products we buy. And it can feel overwhelming, but you just slowly chip away at it. Like you slowly start to find your companies that you really love for different things, whether it's supplements or salt or your protein powder or whatever. And you kind of get to know them intimately and you become a loyalist just because you're like, thank you for doing things right and not being snaky and not being weird. Like, it's just stop being so weird. Some of these companies, you know, and they're brilliant marketers. That's the kind of the scary thing is some of these products that are, especially being in the social media world, is there a lot of the stuff that's, you know, every single influencer talks about, it's not actually even any good. It's like, how did they do this? But they're just playing on, you know, human psychology and stuff. So anyways, okay, Daryl, I will let you go. I really appreciate your passion, your expertise. You feel like me in that the way that you feel about salt is the way that I feel about babies and pregnancy. And you know, like way too much about it, but it's so interesting to talk to you.
Well, I sure appreciate you having me on. It's been a real pleasure. And I love that idea that you've kind of hit on a few times of just living more intentionally. Yes, we're all going to make choices that maybe don't align with our current philosophy occasionally, and we'll, you know, cheat on our cheat days. But I think if we all could be a little more intentional about how we spend our dollars and how we spend our life, it'd be a lot happier, healthier place. And so thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you for being here. And I just appreciate your passion and your brilliance around this topic. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Are you pregnant or you're trying to conceive and you're looking for reliable natural health information about how to have a healthy pregnancy and also prepare for the future steps in motherhood to come, like the birth, the breastfeeding, and the postpartum? Because I have got you. So this is exactly the reason why I made the 6-week pregnancy call. And it's my most comprehensive resource. It's the thing that I absolutely love. I've poured my heart and soul into it. It's all of the things that I wish that every woman knew when they are entering motherhood. It's a pregnancy health course, birth prep series, breastfeeding 101 class, and a postpartum planning course all in one. And normally I run it as a class with live Q&A calls, but now it's available in a content-only format so that you can purchase it at any time and start learning immediately. It's called the lessons-only format, and it is just only all of the video lessons that you'll get access to for forever. So log on to milkmedicine.com/lessons-only or check out the link in the show notes.
In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.